This story is about a yid named Meir. And Meir goes to shul in the morning, and he davens, and he learns the Torah, and he'd love to stay in the shul, but he can't, because he has a family. He has to make money for his family, for his wife in Kinilach. What does Meir do to make money? This is what Meir does. After the shul, he goes to the marketplace. And over there are Goyish peasants selling stuff. Some have wagons, and some have bags, and some have little stands like booths they made, little tables. One is selling chickens, and one is selling apples, and one is selling potatoes, and one is selling tomatoes, and all the kind of stuff they sell in the marketplace. And Meir, he goes to buy things in the marketplace, whatever things he thinks is a good deal to buy. And he was very good in prices to find out, you know, how much things are. So he'll buy a few tomatoes, and let's say he'll pay a nickel for a tomato. He'll buy a few apples. Let's say he'll pay 10 cents an apple. He'll buy some potatoes, maybe 4 cents a potato. And he'll buy other stuff, all kinds of things. Well, what does he do to make money? He just spent money. How can he make money if he spent money? Well, this is what he does. He takes the bags of stuff that he bought home. And next to his house is a little store. And his wife is working in the little store, and he helps out. And the little store sells food and things from the marketplace, just like the stuff he bought. Not only just like, exactly what he bought.
Rabbi Burstyn, if he bought it, so why is he going to sell it? I don't understand.
Oh, this is why. He sells now. Now let's say tomatoes. What did he pay for a tomato? A nickel for a tomato. Well, he bought that from the goy in the marketplace, which was way down the hill. And he lives way up the hill. Well, way down the hill by the marketplace, a tomato costs 5 cents. But in the store, he'll sell it for 6 cents.
But Rabbi Burstyn, why should he sell it for more money now in the store and in the goy in the marketplace who sold it for a nickel?
Simple. This is how business works. You buy it cheap in one place, and you sell it for more in a different place. That's how business works.
But it's not fair.
Oh, why isn't it fair? A neighbor wants to get a tomato. And the neighbor thinks, if I walk way down the hill to the marketplace, I can get it for a nickel. But if I just go right over to Mayor's house, to the little store, I can get it for 6 cents. I'm paying an extra penny, but do I have to schlep all the way back down the hill and up the hill? So it's worth it for me to pay 6 cents and get it here than to pay 5 cents and get it down there. So the person says, in fact, I'm happy to pay the money. It saves me the trip. So, Meir and his wife make a little money on the tomato, and the neighbor gets the tomato without having to schlep, and everybody's happy. That's how the business works. Somebody else wants an apple. Well, in the store, the apple is 12 cents. How much did they pay? How much did Meir pay in the marketplace? 10 cents. Well, if a person wants, they can go all the way down the hill to the marketplace. And they can find a guy who's selling nice apples. And he could pay 10 cents. And then walk all the way up the hill, and he's got his apple for 10 cents. But maybe that person says, I'd rather go to Mayor's store and pay 12 cents, and I have a nice apple right away, than to go all the way down and all the way up. Who understands how business works? This is business. And the same is for potatoes, and the same is for eggies, and the same is for watermelons and bananas and all the kind of stuff. That's how it goes. This is how Meir's business went. He was very fair. Meir was very fair. He never cheated anybody. He wanted to be honest. But of course, he had to, you know, charge a little extra money. And even when he bought from the goyim in the marketplace, he was also fair. Now, sometimes the goyim did not say, 10 cents for an apple. They said, how much do you want to pay for the apple? Because the goy wants to see, maybe you're going to offer more money, or maybe he can, you know, like, what do you call it? Bargain. You understand? It's haggling. Now, another person might say, this apple, I'll give you a penny for the apple. Huh? A penny for the apple? It's a good apple. I want $1 for the apple. $1 for the apple? Are you kidding? Nobody pays $1 for an apple. And then the other person says, but nobody pays a penny for an apple. And the guy says, nobody pays a penny for an apple. Okay, I'll give you 2 cents. 2 cents? What do you mean 2 cents? Well, you want $1. That's ridiculous. Well, okay, 70 cents. 70 cents, forget you. 2 cents, forget you. I'll give you 3 cents. It's not enough. Okay, 60 cents, I'll sell it to you. 60 cents for an apple, and they haggle back and forth, because the one who buys knows he's asking too little, and the one who sells knows he's asking too much. So they argue back and forth, until finally, okay, 10 cents. All right, 10 cents. And it took a long time to get to that. And each one knows they're going to have a big argument. This is the way other people bought and other people sold. But when they knew when the mayor comes to the marketplace, mayor is fair. Either if the goy will say 10 cents and that's fair, mayor is not going to argue, he'll pay the 10 cents. Or if the goy himself will not know exactly how much to sell it for, he'll ask mayor, how much will you give it to me for? I'm sorry. He's going to ask mayor, how much will you pay for these tomatoes? Oh, these are nice tomatoes. I'll pay 15 cents a tomato. They're excellent tomatoes. Oh, okay, 15 cents. If mayor says 15 cents is 15 cents, give me 15 cents a tomato. We're not going to argue with mayor. Mayor is fair. And then he'll take his 15 cent tomatoes, and he'll take them home, and he'll sell it in the store for 17 cents. And he'll be fair to other people. This is the way mayor did the business. Mayor was able to make enough money, just enough money for his family, to buy things they needed and take care of his kids and buy them clothes and stuff like that. They lived very simply. They were not rich, but you cannot say they were very poor. They were very happy that they had enough, and they thanked Hashem. But one thing bothered Mir. He would love to spend more time davening and learning Torah. But what can he do? He has to do this business. But as he did the business, he says, I wish I was in shul. I could daven longer and learn more Torah. That's what I really like to do. So one day, Mer is thinking to himself, he says, wait a minute. Who is giving really the money? The customers? Who's giving all the food in the marketplace? The goyim? The peasants? The farmers? Not really. Who is taking care of all this business? Hashem. In other words, it's like Hashem is my partner taking care of the business. But wait a minute. Why should myself and my partner do every single day all of this business with eggs, with tomatoes and potatoes and watermelons and bananas? Hashem's real business is Torah and mitzvahs. Maybe I don't have to go every single day to do the marketplace business. Instead of going Sunday and Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, of course Erev Shabbos, maybe I'll just go Sunday, but Monday I'll stay in shul and I'll learn Torah and daven and do Hashem's real business. And then Tuesday I'll go and do some more business in the marketplace, and Wednesday I'll stay in shul. Thursday I'll go and do business, making some money for the family. And Erev Shabbos, I'll stay in shul and get ready for Shabbos. So instead of working 6 days a week, I'll work 3 days a week. Who says Hashem can't help us and take care of us 3 days a week? What, it has to be 6 days a week? He can also take care of us in 3 days a week. Who says Hashem can only give us if I work 6 days a week? 3 days a week. And Hashem is my partner, and He'll be happy that I'm learning Torah and doing mitzvahs and davening. So, this is what he decided to do. And he told his wife, instead of working every day, I'm going to work only 3 days a week. She said, oh, well, how are we going to make the money we need for our family? He says, listen, hasn't Hashem taken care of us? Isn't Hashem the partner in the business? He'll be happy we're doing the real business, and only 3 days a week we do the other business. Let's see if Hashem can take care of us working half the time. Maybe it's going to be more bracha. Well, she said, we'll give it a try. And sure enough, Sunday, he goes to the marketplace and he buys some beautiful tomatoes and some excellent potatoes and some very fresh eggs and a few nice bananas and some shiny apples. And he takes them to the store and they sell them in the store, and they had some, you know, customers come and they bought a lot of stuff. And it was sold out, and at the end of Sunday, they made so much money. Baruch Hashem. I don't have to go to work on Monday, because we made so much on Sunday. And then he goes on Tuesday, and there are some beautiful fruits and beautiful vegetables and nice things, and he brings it to the store, and they sell everything on Tuesday, so Wednesday he doesn't have to go to work anymore. And Thursday went to work, and Erev Shabbos he was able to stay home, and they had enough even to make Shabbos, buying a little fishy and meat, or chickens, and challah, and all the good stuff for Shabbos, with the cholent and the soup, and the kegel, and the kugel, and maybe even a potato kugel, and even a lakshin kugel, maybe. And Kinelach, they saw that the plan was good. They had what they needed, and Meir was able to learn more Torah and daven and be in shul. And so it went on for a few weeks and a few months and even a few years, until one day Meir's wife comes into Meir and she says, Meir, our daughter Mirala, her name was Mirala, not Meir, because Meir is the Tati's name, Mirala, Miral. There's Meryl and there's Miral. Meryl is Meryl and Miral is Miral. And Mirala is the oldest daughter. And she is old enough to be a kalamedel. What means a kalamedel? What does that mean? Come over here. What does it mean, a kalamedel? I don't say a kalamedel, because that would be a girlie who eats kala. What's a kalamedel?
A kala.
What's a kala?
Person.
Some people can't say chala, so they say kala. And we have to get some kala for Shabbos. Well, not exactly. It's a chala. It's a kala. Now I'm all mixed up. What is a kala?
A person that's ready to get married.
A person that's ready to get married. Well, it's the girl person that's ready to get married, because the boy, if he's ready to get married, that's a chusen bucher, right? A chusen, okay. So Mirala is ready to get married. Now, in order to get married, you need to have money. The kala needs a beautiful dress, and she needs all the things that she needs. And of course, the chasana and kala, and they need to make the chasana with food, with all the delicious food, and the musicians, and the place, and invite guests. And as we know, all the things that go into making a chasana, and of course a place to live, and all the things to set up a new Jewish home. And this is a very big expense. And Mayer and his family were just getting by week to week, day to day, on selling the things in the store, and they had no money saved up to make a chasana, which would cost a lot of money. So she says, Mayer, Mirla is ready to get married, and we have no money to help her to be a kala, to find her a shidduch. What's going to be? We have to save money. It probably should be, Mayor, that instead of going to work 3 days a week, you should go back to work 6 days a week, so that we should get more money to be able to have money for the chasana. And Mayor thought to himself, and he said, wait a minute. The opposite. Now, it's important that our Mirale gets married, which is a big mitzvah and a thing that Hashem wants very much. And to make a Jewish home is probably the most important thing that a Yid can do, to make a Jewish home and have a family. So, if Hashem was helping us by me working 3 days a week and the other 3 days learning Torah and davening and doing mitzvahs, has Hashem helped us till now? Yes. Does Hashem know that Mirla is ready to get married? Yes. Does Hashem know how old she is? Does Hashem know that she needs money for a chasana? Yes. So how can I stop doing the main business in a time that we need Hashem's help more? I certainly should go on doing Hashem's business. And hopefully Hashem will give us a bracha to be able to make the chasana. How can I stop doing Hashem's main business in a time that we need Hashem's help even more? Doesn't make sense. Who says if I work 6 days a week, I'll get more money than I was 3 days a week? Because till now we saw that because I was learning and davening, we had the same money that we had from 6 days a week, we got it in 3 days a week. But we need a lot more money. And he says, who says by working harder and giving up learning, that's the way to get us more money? It makes sense, it's a cheshbon, but not necessarily things work that way. Things work according to Hashem's bracha. Well, how will we get Hashem's bracha? Well, for sure, not to go down and do something less than we're doing now. Now I'm doing business every day. 3 days a week I'm doing regular business, and 3 days a week I'm doing halakha business. And that should be the source of the bracha. So how can we save more money? And Mayor says, don't worry, Hashem will help. How many boys think that Hashem is going to help? How many boys think that the only way to get money for the chasana is to buy giving up learning and to go work harder? Who thinks that's the way? Okay, we'll see. Who would like to hear more of this story? A few days later, it was on a Monday, just like today is Monday. A goy came into the marketplace carrying a big piece of wood. Now, the big piece of wood was a piece of a tree. The tree trunk. A chopped off piece of a tree trunk. And on the top of it was a cover, either made out of metal or some kind of material. It looked kind of like a big bucket, but it wasn't a bucket. It was a section of a tree that had been cut out of the tree. And it was covered over with a cover. What is that? What is that thing? And around the side was all sticky. What is that sticky stuff? What is that big piece of wood? What is that big piece of tree? And it's all sticky with a cover, and this guy is carrying it. What is this thing? And people go over and say, well, what is that you're carrying, that big thing? It looked pretty heavy, too. He says, this is a beehive without the bees. Oh, a beehive without the bees. Now, what good is a beehive without the bees? What's inside of a beehive if there's no bees over there?
Is it
honey. That's right. Honey. This is a beehive, which means it's full of honey. A beehive. Ooh, honey. A lot of honey. Why is it in that tree? Well, it happens to be in this tree. It's a whole story how it's in this tree. I found it, and I cut it down, and I took it, and I'm going to sell it. Oh, we want to buy it. We want to buy the honey. How much do you want for it? Not selling it to you. I want to buy it. How much money do you want for it? I'm not selling it to you. What do you mean? You come to the marketplace, and you're going to sell it, and now you're not selling it? Does this make sense? He says, of course it makes sense, because I'm not selling it to you. I'm selling it to Mayor. Where is Mayor? I know Mayor is fair. I don't know exactly how much to charge for it. All I know, it's worth a lot of money. And anybody else is going to haggle and argue and, you know, make all kinds of shtick. And I don't know if I'm going to be given a fair deal. I know that Reb Mayor, he is always fair. So where is Mayor who's fair? Is he here? Is he there? That's why I came. I want to find Reb Mayor. And I want him to buy it. If he buys it, I know I'm getting a fair price. Mayor doesn't come today. He doesn't do business today. He's in the shul learning and stuff like that, what Jews do in the shul, the synagogue. Yeah? I don't know about no synagogue. I have to find Mayor. Now, where does he live? You go up the hill, and over there, his wife has a store. That's where Mayor lives, way up the hill. Okay, I'm going to go over there. Maybe he'll be there later or something. I want to go find him. And the goy is carrying this big, heavy piece of wood way up the hill. And he knocks on the door over there. Where is the place of living Reb Mayor? He knocks on Reb Mayor's door, and Reb Mayor's wife comes to the door, and she sees this goy with this big thing, and she finds out it's a beehive, and he wants to sell it to Mayor. And Mayor is in shul. Well, I have to sell it. I can't just schlep this thing around. It's big and heavy and sticky. I don't know how much I can carry it around. Well, Mayor will be tomorrow in the marketplace. I don't think I could wait for tomorrow. I want to sell him today to him. I know he's fair. Can you please have him come so I could sell it to him? And Mayor's wife realized that this is a good deal, a good business deal. After all, if they get a fair price on this honey, they could sell it for more money, and they could make money. And from the honey, it's a lot of honey, means a lot of money, so that will help them. Maybe it's going to help them to get money for their family, which they need. And of course, as I told you, Mirule has to get married, and they have to save some extra money. Maybe this is a way to save some extra money, because they'll have a big thing of honey. And from the honey will come out money. And Mrs. Mayor, I don't know what their last name was, she goes to the shul, and she goes to Mayor, and she says, Mayor, please come home. There's something important. Could you please come just for a little while? And Mayor comes. And, of course, he sees this goy with this big piece of wood, a sawed-off piece of a tree with a cover on it, and it's all sticky. He sees this is a very good deal to get so much honey. He lifted up the tree stump. It was so heavy. He looked at the honey on top. Now, it wasn't honey, it was honeycomb. Honeycomb means the stuff that the bees make in the beehive, and from this you squeeze out the honey. The bees had made the honeycomb there, and Reb Mayor looks at it. It's full of honey. He lifts up the top, it's like a layer. There's more honeycomb under that, where the bees made the honey. He lifts that up, there's more. Oh, this is worth a lot of money. Reb Mayor says a price to the goy, to the peasant. And he smiles, oh, that's a good price. I'll sell it to you. Reb Mayor's wife says, but we don't have so much money. Whatever it was, let's say it was 50 rubles. They didn't have the money, even though it was worth it. The mayor's wife says, I'll go to the neighbors and borrow money, and we'll pay for the tree stump beehive, And when we sell the honey in the store and get money for the honey, so with that money, I'll go back to pay the neighbors what I borrowed. But Mary says, well, I think that's what we should do. So she runs around to the neighbors and borrows here and borrows there, and she gets all the money together, and they pay the peasant the money, and they take the tree stump full of honey after they paid the money, and now they take it into the house to get out the honey so they can put it in the store to sell it to get money. Because they don't really want the honey as much as the money. But in order to get the money, they have to have the honey. And now, Reb Meir says, what are we going to put the honey in? We got to have stuff. Now, they didn't have so many jars and bottles and plastic containers left over from ice cream and stuff like that. They had to get stuff, containers, to put the honey in. So she went around and borrowed pots and pans and bottles, as well as whatever pots and pans and bottles they had in their house, to start squeezing out the honey so they can sell it and get money. And they took the first layer of honeycomb, and they squeeze out honey, they fill up a pot. And they take the second layer of honeycomb and squeeze out the honey and fill up a big, like a soup pot full of honey. And they take the third layer and they squeeze it out and fill up a big jar. And all of a sudden, of course, this is where the stories always get good, when they say all of a sudden, because that's where the exciting part is. And many times things happen all of a sudden. Shh. After the third layer of honeycomb, what do you think should come? The fourth layer of honeycomb, shouldn't it? I mean, after all, this is a big tree stump. There should be about 20 layers of honeycomb. But there was a slight problem here. Instead of after number three coming number four, after number three came nothing. You know why? Because instead of more honey, there was one big gigantic hole. Nothing was there. The honey was only on the top, and the rest of it was what? Empty. Nothing there. Only the tree stump. An empty tree stump. Oh no! It's like, what if you're very thirsty, and you have this, and there's only like a few drops of water on the top, and the rest of it is empty. That's what they got. They bought a tree stump that was part honey, and mostly empty. And they have no more honey to get out of it, because there's no more honey left. It's empty. Oh no. It felt heavy because of the wood. But there's nothing in here. And now, we don't have enough honey to sell to get enough money even to pay back what we borrowed, much less to be able to make extra money. And what's our daughter Mirli going to do? How will she get married if we don't get money for her? And Reb Meir's wife starts to cry. Oh, what are we going to do? Now, Kenelach, shh, listen with three ears, because this is the big, big, important part of the story. Reb Meir says, we trusted in Hashem. This thing came our way. We meant well. And it says in the davening, we say on Shabbos, some Tehillim, Shkiyois mi yavin. It means, who will understand everything, never to make a mistake? Sometimes a person makes a mistake. So you daven to Hashem, if I, Chas v'Shalom, am doing something and there's going to be a mistake, please help me, Hashem, I shouldn't make the mistake. But sometimes a person makes the mistake, and he didn't know exactly what he's getting himself into. So the end of the pasuk says, "Ministarois nakeni." If there was something that was nistar, was hidden, I didn't know about it. Hashem, cleanse me, help me from that. If I already made the mistake, help me. So you ask Hashem, help me before the mistake, And if I made the mistake, help me afterwards. We did not know this was an empty stump. We thought it was full. We meant well. And now all of a sudden, we're left with an empty stump. How could it be that if we trusted in Hashem, He's just letting us down? And Reb Meir's wife says, it sounds good what you're saying, but that's it. We're left with an empty stump, a piece of wood with a hole in it. And Reb Meir says, wait a minute. Not so fast.